So as I mentioned last week, as we move through these four chapters, we want to pay attention to the posture of this woman from a foreign land. Her name is Ruth, from the country of Moab. In particular, we want to look at her movement and actually the work of her hands. Today, Ruth is going to enter the harvest fields of a man named Boaz. She's intending to work hard. She is prepared to work hard. And we read in chapter 2, at the beginning of chapter 2, we read these words. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." And Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." And so she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in the field of belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. What is Ruth going to do? What is she doing there? She is gleaning. Gleaning is an interesting term. We don't use it too much. She's going into a field and she's picking up what is being intentionally left behind by the workers of the field. How important is this for us to know? Well, 10 different times in this chapter, the concept of gleaning is mentioned either directly or in a descriptive way. For instance, as we see in verse 2, we read that Ruth picks up leftover grain in my NIV version. Or in verse 15, we read of Boaz's instructions to let her gather among the sheaves. Those words, those descriptions mean gleaning. Her hands are going to need strength. They're going to be dry. They're going to be calloused. They're going to be bruised. Not like my office hands. However, she will not complain. And she will choose to re-enter the fields day after day from morning till evening for a period of at least 3 months from the beginning of the barley harvest to the end of the wheat harvest. So come, let's join her in the fields of faith. And as we do, we will see that Ruth's faith is founded on the certainty of God's presence. You know, we often toss this phrase around, have faith, without much consideration. Sometimes people might even think, well, as long as you believe in something, have faith in something, then that's really all the faith you need. Faith just becomes a word without any definition. Even good-intentioned followers of Jesus liken faith to a quantity and often wonder when times are difficult if it's not because they don't have enough of this thing called faith. But that's not really an accurate reflection of faith from a biblical perspective. God is the object of our faith. Our faith is first and foremost centered on who He is, no matter the circumstances that we endure. As a widowed young woman in a new community, in a culture of evil, Ruth understood that God was present. Ruth understood that she also needed to work, function in response to His faithfulness towards her and Naomi over a long course of their lives. That meant that she needed to go into the fields. Ruth had come to learn, likely from Naomi, that God was present and provided for the people of Israel in the past. In fact, this chapter, in Ruth chapter 2, is the most prolific mention of the concept of gleaning. The second most prolific passage is found in Exodus chapter 16, and you can turn back there if you like. In Exodus chapter 16, this comes after God has miraculously rescued the Israelites from slavery to the Egyptians. He has heard the cries of the people. He is moved with compassion, and He rescued the people from the oppression under which they lived. God had been with them, leading them across the Red Sea, showing Himself through the presence of a pillar of cloud in the day and a pillar of fire at night. The Israelites now enter into the desert to begin their journey to the Promised Land, and God is still demonstrating the nearness of His presence to them. but it wasn't good enough for them. It wasn't good enough for many of the people, and they began to grumble and complain. In response, not to the grumbling of the plain, or God responds, but not in response to the grumbling of the people, but rather the interceding prayer of Moses and Aaron, that the Lord made a promise. He said, I'm going to provide another symbol of my presence, and I will provide for them every day. All they needed to do was take their hands and go and gather. Not too much, not for their want, but only for their daily need. The promise of their presence, of his presence, was that daily bread would be given each day. And to emphasize how much value the Lord placed on developing his relationship with them, he told them ahead of time not to wear themselves out trying to hoard more. Rather, he would supply enough so that they could take time to rest, renew themselves in the promises of his presence, and then be ready to continue the journey, confident that he was with them. This is how it's written in Exodus 16. Moses also said, you will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord. Then Moses told Aaron, say to the entire Israelite community, come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling. And while Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And so Ruth understood that God was her provider. She went into the fields with a faith in who God was and who he declared he would be based on how he worked in the past. She went with an expectation that he would then provide again. Now notice, secondly, that working in fields of faith requires discernment. In the second part of verse 2, Ruth makes clear that she isn't just going out randomly and hoping for good luck. She's going out using discernment. The phrase, as it turns out, that I read is a good phrase to recognize that God was involved in this. Using discernment is one of the ways that the Spirit of God works in us, helping us to make decisions that honor him. Ruth wanted to work in the fields where she might find favor. You see, the other thing that Ruth understood was that God had also given some instructions to the people of Israel about how they ought to use their land. In Leviticus 19, God provides guidance. Guidance that Ruth likely saw lived out by Naomi and her husband Elimelech, and maybe even that she practiced herself with her husband when he was alive. Ruth was using discernment to figure out which field to enter. She wasn't looking for a handout, rather she was looking for the presence of God, the evidence that he was at work. She had a desire to work and believed that there would be a field where there would be leftovers, a field into which she would be welcomed, particularly because she was a newcomer, a foreigner, and she was economically poor, and she was a woman. She would need to be in a field of faith for sure. And this field of faith, where God had led her, belonged to a man of integrity, a man of faithfulness to the Lord, who handled himself and his words with grace and with kindness. This field of faith was where people were empowered to carry out their responsibilities in keeping with God's desire to welcome and provide for others, even others of different social status or different cultural backgrounds. Familiar or foreign, they were all welcomed in this field of faith. This was a field of faith where the harvest wasn't being hoarded for self-serving indulgence. Rather, it was being managed or stewarded with a desire to honor the Lord and represent His character to all who were involved. As Boaz enters the field that day, you see this in verse 4. Notice his hands. I picture them extended, lifted, welcoming. And he greets those that he meets. And he says these words, "The Lord be with you." To which those working lift up from their labor and also extend and lift up their hands and respond to him, "The Lord bless you." You know what would be really fun? And maybe not fun, but interesting. Let's just try that. It's a little different, right? So change of posture. Extend your hand. So we're going to just split the room down the middle. You guys are going to look this way. Raise your hand, and so here's your words. I'll give you your words. It's just like practicing the Christmas play. You love this, right? So your side, you're going to lift your hands. You're going to say, "The Lord be with you." Okay? Hang on. Your side, you're going to turn and you're going to lift your hands and you're going to say, "The Lord bless you." Okay? Shall we try that? I know. You got to talk to each other. So weird. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Ready? Okay, wait. They're not coming in yet. That's not good enough. Okay. Lift up your hands, right? You want them to understand that this is important, right? Let's try that again. Ready? 1, 2, 3. All right. Is that better? No? Okay. All right. So you had 2 runs at it. We'll give them a second try, but you'll start, okay? You ready? 1, 2, 3. Come on now, that is way better, right? That is so important. Don't take that for granted. You see, in the fields of faith, there is blessing to be discovered. The understanding that when we exchange blessing like that, that does something when we convey to one another that the Lord is with us. We see this in the way that continues, in the way that Ruth and Boaz and their exchange of words, how they exchange words of kindness with one another. And we see it in the response of blessing as a spark of hope beginning to ignite in Naomi's life when Ruth returns home as you continue to move through the chapter. He said, listen to her words in verse 19. He says, "Blessed be the one who took notice of you." And again in verse 20 we read, "The Lord bless him." These expressions of blessing aren't trite or empty. They are full of faith, full of understanding that reminds us that God is present. It's a prayer lifted up to God in the hope and confidence that He will continue His ongoing provision for mankind. Blessing is an act of humility that acknowledges the providence and sovereignty of God, that He is in control of the unfolding of our days, and that He is always near. Through blessing, we embed ourselves, we surround ourselves, we remind ourselves and others that we are held in the promise of the presence of God. Blessing provides an assurance of God's providential care and His abiding presence in fulfillment of His greater eternal purposes. Blessing is the open hand we yield to God, knowing only He can lead us and only He can satisfy our needs, deal with our burdens, our confusion, and our distress. But I want you to also notice the hand of Boaz for this reason. I want you to notice that it's held up against injustice. You see, in the fields of faith, there is a glimpse of the kingdom of God, which we read about in Isaiah chapter 11. Remember that the times in which this was taking place were times steeped in evil and darkness, where everyone did what they thought was right in their own eyes. It was a time of oppression. It was a time of great exploitation. And all you need to do is read the 19th chapter of Judges to be reminded to just how horrific the evil, the extent of evil that was occurring in those times, what it was like. Don't do it with small children out loud if you've never read it before. Let me give you a little tip. But in the midst of this kind of evil, this kind of darkness, Boaz stands apart. A reminder that it is possible to be faithful to God and his ways, even when the cultural tide seems to be overwhelmingly pushing us in a different direction. Boaz seems to instill this kind of countercultural way in the people who worked with him. They understood the purpose of his words when he gave them instructions to be generous in keeping with Ruth's initiative. And he ensured that her safekeeping would never be in question. Why did he do that? Why would he go to such an extent for a poor, strange woman from a different country? Because of his faith in God. That's because he understood that in a world of brokenness and with broken people, only God can redeem and transform and bring life-altering change and deepen faith in what he promises will one day come to pass. And only people in the fields of faith can communicate this truth to those who are ready to receive it. How do we know this to be true? Because Boaz's mother was a prostitute. Her name was Rahab. You can read about her in the beginning of the book of Joshua. Boaz would be particularly sensitive to protecting women from exploitation because of this. That's true. What is also true is that Boaz would understand that faith in God, that is, being held by the promise of his kingdom fulfilled, even in a culture of exploitation and evil, it is possible. He had seen it lived out in his mother and father, as they were embraced by Joshua and the Israelites. The 11th chapter of Hebrews starts with these words: "Now faith is confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. And Rahab, Boaz's mother, is counted among those who is found faithful in the book of Hebrews. She is listed among those who look beyond her present circumstances to recognize that God has better things in store." This week I've been reading a book by author and pastor Scott Sauls entitled "Beautiful People Don't Just Happen: How God Redeems Regret, Hurt, and Fear in the Making of Better Humans." Among the notable quotes I'm taking from this book is the following: "Expressing distressed emotion in a broken world is a sign not of weak faith, but of strong faith. It is a sign not of spiritual immaturity, but of spiritual maturity. It is a sign not that we are unlike Christ, but that we are like Christ. It is not a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength." Faith has God as our focus. His promises provide our incentive, and his presence gives us the assurance that we need to persevere in the brokenness of this world. In so doing, we ready ourselves, like the faithful that have gone before us, to receive the fullness of all that he is preparing for us. And in his mercy, God gives us glimpses of his kingdom even now. And in fields of faith together, we get to extend those glimpses of his kingdom to others. We get to welcome and invite others like us and others unlike us to find fullness in the fields of faith. So what can we do? I want to share with you four ways that we can participate in fields of faith. The first, like Ruth, just do small things well and do them consistently. Small acts of obedience that are birth of our belief that God is holding us changes our enthusiasm and has a positive effect on those around us. I know some of you are weary, but do not grow weary in doing the good that reflects the goodness of the character of God. Simple things that you can control, like a willingness to work hard, the ability to honor your commitments, respect authority, show kindness to those you live with, work with, participate in school with. Secondly, like Boaz, we can live simply and generously. Boaz had a deep understanding of the mercy of God passed down from his parents. He understood that all that he had was actually God's and that he was to manage it or steward it in a way that honored God. He did not consume all he had. He intentionally left margin in his field with his words and with his time. And though there were famines in the lands surrounding them, through faithfulness, people like Boaz were being used to demonstrate the promise of the presence of God. And in our day, in increasingly challenging economic times, we must learn to live below our means, and that means constant adjustment, so that we can continue to respond to the needs of those around us. That's the mandate that God has given to us. And as we do, we demonstrate and we point people toward faith in God. Thirdly, like people in the fields of faith, we can contend for justice that this world often neglects or minimizes. One of the greatest criticisms of organized church is our unwillingness to recognize or get involved in matters of injustice in our communities. In so doing, we are guilty of having gravitated toward a fullness of truth and only a smattering of convenient grace, which is actually a pale representation of the example and intention of Jesus, who comes to us full of both grace and truth, and of whom many of us claim to celebrate, particularly at this time of year. We can be guilty of satisfying ourselves with arm's length involvement through projects, but avoid the personal, messy interactions with real people whose souls long for a full representation of that grace and truth-filled faith that is steeped in love. And without such love, the actions then ring hollow. Fourth, we can bless others. Blessing, and this is for anybody, can do this. And you realize, just even in our little exercise, how a little bit you had to battle through something in your psychologically. But everybody can do this, from youngest to oldest, and no matter where you go. Blessing, in my opinion, is incorrectly often defined as happiness. Happiness is subjective and it's centered on me. Many of us pursue happiness or self-gratification. That is what makes us feel good. We chase happiness. We are tempted by happiness. We are enticed by happiness. Similarly, and incorrectly, in my opinion, there are those who will tell you that blessing is to be equated with material gain. More money, more stuff, more comfort. And there may be times where that is a byproduct, but that is not the focus or the purpose of blessing. God is greater than our subjective measurements, and He wants to give you more than happiness. God wants to give you Himself. The promise of His presence that goes with you and by which we are held. As you understand this, then you will be prompted by His Spirit to extend blessing to others, much like Jesus did at the beginning of the greatest sermon ever spoken. Jesus opens His message in Matthew chapter 5 with words of blessing to all who were gathered. the promise of blessing for a wearied spirit, the promise of blessing for those who long for what has been missed or lost, blessing for the humble efforts done in patient perseverance, blessing for those who long to be satisfied amid growing injustice, blessing for those who dig deep in the well of mercy, wondering if there is just a little bit more available to give. Blessing for the perseverance of holiness. Blessing for the longing for shalom or peace for those in our care. Blessing even for the even when our best kingdom intentions and efforts bring opposition. Blessing is what Jesus conveys to us. It's the invitation of Jesus to continue to walk with him in his work, in his direction, and at his pace. In the fields of faith, surrounded by a culture of distrust, envy, oppression, and greed, it is the glimpses of heaven that allow our faith to rise within us, to strengthen us in our weakness, and deepen our understanding that we are held by God. The promise of his presence is sure. He holds us despite the brokenness of our lives and the brokenness of our world, even as he moves toward the fulfillment of all things. This is what the church needs to reflect. This is what I need to reflect. May it also be what you need to reflect. This is the invitation of Jesus to you, to me, and to others through us. May the Lord bless you. May he bless you, and may he continue his faith-building work among us.